to fly once a week to church. And let this Noachic pastor over there, with his Noachic moral values, who talks about pie in the sky, lift me up once a week to the heights, from whence I get a little glimpse of freedom from the matter below. But then, after the service, I quickly must return to what I call real life, with my feet on solid ground, preferably chained to the ground. I have come back. I have returned as a son of the earth. I spent a few hours as a son of God in the high places. Hopefully that will guarantee my place in heaven. But the rest of the week, I am like everybody else, the chained eagles to the earth. Does that picture sound unfair, or does it sound rather true? Be honest with yourself. Can you say you are free? Lao Tzu knew what he was talking about. His followers didn't necessarily know what he was talking about. They got all mixed up into spiritism and other such rubbish. But if there was a free man in the ancient history of China, Lao Tzu would have been one of them. Do you know what is freedom from all this material bondage? Have you even remotely experienced such a thing? Do you know what I am talking about? If you have experienced freedom, what Lao Tzu speaks of, non-desire, what Paul speaks of having been crucified to the world in Paul's language, who taught Lao Tzu these things? Who taught him this? I wonder whether it wasn't already that the Spirit of God was working before Jesus came, even in the Old Testament days, not only in Israel, but around the world. And there were a few who listened to the voice of the Spirit, because I wonder, how could he have seen such things? How could he have had such depth of insight? Non-desire for these things. You think it's easy? Go down to 2020 again, in the ninth shot, and see. Your heart is being pulled away again. Non-desire? No, no. Non-desire is only when this Noachic pastor is preaching is okay. For those few minutes, I experience a little tinge of non-desire. A little bit, for a few moments, I am set free from the world. I have some idea what he's talking about. Freedom. If only I was not so attracted by the world and by material things. I can see that I would soar up. My mind would be undistracted by the world and all these tinkling toys. And for those few moments, I would rise into eternal things. But even my prayer time, I can't do that. I get to prayer time and the world got me. I try to rise and I discover that my chain will allow me to rise about 1 foot off the ground. And then it's all struggling all the way until, exhausted, I fall back to the ground, unable to break the chain of material desire. My ministry in Montreal. Throughout this ministry, I have longed, if God permits, that God will build for himself a people of power. A people who know their God. A people free, not just from sin, but from the world. Because let me tell you, my beloved brothers and sisters, you will never be free from sin until you are free from the world. Where does sin come from? It is living in the world. And so long as you are bound, not crucified to the world, but bound by the world, you will always struggle in defeat and in sin, like the chained eagle, unable to rise. But let me, in these closing moments, as it were, of my ministry in Montreal, kindle, if only for a few moments, in your mind, in your heart, the vision of the eternal. And remind you, this world is fast passing away. The end of all things is at hand. Maybe your end is at hand. In Luke chapter 12, the Lord went on immediately to talk about the parable of the rich fool. He was with the same mentality. Get more, get more. Build bigger storehouses. He is the image of success in the world. Oh, he is successful. And isn't that what you want? You want success. That's what the world is about. And success means material possessions in particular. And the Lord said, that was a fool. Tonight, your life will be required of you. Did the fool, the rich fool, fool though rich though fool, was he able to take even a handful of his grains with him? Not to mention his pearls and his diamonds. For him, the end of all things was at hand, nearer than he thought. You may think you are young, you may think you are healthy. I'm not going to scare you with death. I don't want to scare anybody. Fool can be scared. Wise men are not afraid. I hope you are wise, not a fool. If you are a fool, I have to frighten you into the kingdom. If you are wise, I just ask you to think, what are the facts of the matter? Of course, Peter in 1 Peter 4:7 is not just talking about the end of one's particular life, which of course is not too distant for any of us, whether it be 10 years or 30 years or 40. He is talking about the end of this materialistic system. And he is saying, what are you going to get out of all your toil and turmoil? Because your whole life has been orientated to this material system, which is coming to an end. Is this alarmist? We live towards the end of the 20th century, and we are in a particularly good position to appreciate, as the people in Noah's day were not in a position to appreciate. We are in a very good position to appreciate the meaning that the end of all things is at hand. And let me tell you that at the judgment, the people in Noah's day will come off more lightly than you or I. Because they would have had much harder time to appreciate what Noah was saying. You and I, who congratulate ourselves on being clever intellectuals that we are in a much better position. And you must be really blind if you can't see. But now we can understand what Peter meant much better than those people in Noah's day. Why? I hope we can stop and think for a moment. We have near on 5 billion people in the world. But the geographical spaces of this earth are pretty limited as to where you can plant food. But supposing you owned a garden, and that garden produced vegetables and chickens and whatnot. You have a family of 4 people. You can feed your family of 4 people quite well, maybe, on that garden that you have. But your family of 4 rises to 6, to 8, to 10, to 15, to 20, to 100. And are you going to still feed your family from that little garden patch of yours? Not so long ago, the population of this world numbered maybe less than 1 billion. We are approaching 5 billion. The world hasn't gotten any bigger. The fields haven't gotten any larger, nor will they ever be able to get the world to be any bigger. And then population increased to 6 billion, 7 billion, 8 billion, 9 billion. What will happen? Birth control, abortion, child murder, whatever you like. Try to keep the population down. Steadily, slowly, population creeps up. You've got to feed the same number, you feed a greater number of people from the same amount of land. So we improve our technology and we can keep up for a while. We look for alternative food sources and we can still keep up for a while. You don't have to be a genius to see. But one day the food will not be enough, the land will not be enough, and we are going to fight for the food and for the land. And that takes us to the next problem. We with the advancement of technology, wars become more and more destructive, not only of people, but of the land in which we live. The pollution makes the land ever more poisonous, the water more dangerous to drink, not yet at the moment. But as time goes on, the ecological problem will have to end somewhere. And now we are struggling with only a very early stage of the ecological problem of poisoning. To advance technology, the byproducts tend to be always deadly for some reason or other. Is this alarmist, or are we talking truth? Am I frightening you, or are we looking at facts? You decide. As I said, I don't treat you as fools that need to be frightened. I treat you as wise people who can make judgments for yourself. The end of all things is at hand. Even a century ago would have been hard to imagine. But for those of us who live in the end of the 20th century, you and I are all well informed enough to know that there is enough nuclear destructive power to wipe out this earth several times over. That's not alarmist. Those are simply the facts. We have enough power, destructive power, unfortunately, to destroy this earth over several times over. And everybody knows that by some accident somewhere, it just might spark the plug that blows the whole system away. Alarmist? No. It is the non-Christians who tell us that. You have seen films about this, somebody pressing the wrong button and this and that and all this kind of stuff. I've heard that American nuclear captains, submarine captains, have authority at certain times, if they lose communication with Washington, the authority to give the go-ahead to fire. Pretty frightening to think all the possibilities that come from that. We know there are safeguards and extra safeguards. We also know how things have a way of going wrong. Are you scared? Not me. None of this frightens me. Neither famine, nor war, nor disaster, nor destruction frightens me. It frightens the man for whom this world is everything. It doesn't frighten the man for whom this world no longer binds his heart, no longer chains him. It doesn't matter. That's why I say the wise are not frightened. It is the fools who are frightened. And again I say, I treat you not as fools, but as wise. The question, though, is not whether you are frightened or not frightened. The question is, are you ready? And if you are tied to this world blows away, you are gone and everything with it. But for him who lives for what is eternal and knows that the eternal is the real, you don't know it. Is God real to you? No. I think I can say with absolute confidence, not with some confidence, absolute confidence, that for the majority of Christians, God is not real. They believe in God. They believe. It is the rational thing to do. There are virtually no nuclear physicists who don't believe in God. I've given the survey figure of 96 or 98% of all physicists. They all believe in God. Doesn't mean they're Christians. But believing in God is not to say that you know Him. That means you can believe in Him and He's still not real to you. To you, He's not real. You know He's there, but you don't experience Him. You don't know Him personally. Now, how are we going to know Him personally? How do we get the kind of living experiences with Him that you hear other people sharing about, that you hear me sharing about from time to time? How can God be real in this way? That you can talk with Him, that you walk with Him, that daily you have communion with Him, that He talks to you and you talk to Him. Does it all sound fantastic to you? No. If God were not real, I would not be here preaching all of this stuff. I would be out there racing with all of them, competing with all of them to see who gets richer. And I think in that race, I can do pretty well too. I think I can outrun a great lot of that crowd when it comes to getting degrees and getting rich. And why am I not in that race? it doesn't interest me. That race is for a crown that fades away, as Paul says. I'm not running for a crown that fades away. You know, I was reading the other day about the race in the Greek Olympics, and I almost had to burst out laughing. And I remembered what Paul says, they run for a crown that fades away. And you know what the crown is made of? When I read about it, I said, I almost burst out laughing. The crown that the Olympian athletes got in ancient Greece, the crowns of wild celery. They ran for a crown of wild celery. Or sometimes a crown of pine, which I hope didn't hurt their forehead too much, because pines are quite sharp sometimes. But wild celery? Is this a joke? That is the truth. How ridiculous can this get? Oh well, it's not the wild celery that matters. It's the honor that the wild celery brings when you wear it on your forehead. Yeah. Today, at least they dignify it with a piece of metal that might be worth a few tens. I mean, bronze is not worth much, is it? I mean, a guy who gets a bronze medal, if he sold it in the open market, I mean, he might, for the worth of his bronze, he might get a dollar or two. You train so hard to get this piece of junk metal, cheap metal. Well, silver might be worth a few more dollars. Maybe it might be worth $8 or $9. I mean, for all you know. Gold is worth more. I mean, for that he might get $150 or so. Quite good. I mean, you can have a few good meals out of that. At least it's better than wild celery, getting more dignified. You say you're very cynical, isn't it? Huh? Well, I am trying to understand the reason behind all this. What do you live for? I'm going to press this question. Are you free? Or are you still chained to this passing age? Can you still not see that the end of all things is at hand? Or don't you want to see? Maybe both are true. You don't see and you don't want to see. You want to live in bondage to this passing age. Or at least you hope to exhaust what this world has to offer you first. And then when you're old and gray, and you have enjoyed the little pleasures that the world can offer to you, that day you're going to become a Christian. 5 minutes before you die, hopefully you catch the bus in time. And then you get the best of both worlds. You enjoy this world and you enjoy the next. Ah, you're the wisest of all. You know, I say this because the church is full of these wise people. We are full of them. They are trying to put their foot, one in the world and one in the kingdom of heaven. We are so clever. We are so well trained. We have so many degrees. We know how to play games with God. We can play chess with God and even out-chess Him. And so what are we going to do? We're going to get the best of both worlds. We're going to enjoy this world to the full, and we're going to enjoy the next as well. Let me tell you, you can't fool God. Nobody plays chess against God and wins. If you could, He wouldn't be God. The result of playing that game, as you yourself know, is that the church is full of Christians, affluent, wealthy, well-to-do, and they are miserable. They try to play the game both ways, and they don't know God. They know that God is not real to them. So in the end, they only got what the world got. And they are not better off in the least. And in the end, on the day of judgment, what will the Lord say to you? All your life you have been bound to the earth. All your life you have pursued the things that the world has pursued in a more disguised, in a more subtle way. But I look in your heart, the Lord will say, and you are every bit attached to this material age that used to be, just as much as any non-Christian. Your thinking has not changed. You have not become a free man. You could not walk past these things, and there is none desire. But instead, your heart pursued after me. There is the difference between true Christianity and false Christianity. You have already made your choice, and God knows what that choice is. And you know what that choice is, even if nobody else knows what that choice is. It's between God and you. But as I close now, and I have not been able to get through any of the other points of exposition, but I wanted to stress this one point in particular. Can you for a moment imagine, though you haven't experienced it, let me take you for a moment in imagination. What would life be like if you were truly free from little wristwatch TVs and the desire to have them? From the craving to be appreciated in your office and in your job, to be admired by other people because you got a little degree from somewhere, to strut down the road feeling good because you got a new suit on, a new earring, a new hairstyle. Can you imagine what it would be like if you were free from all of these things? That you had none desire. And that you did not put your energy to strive for this kind of things. So that you could turn your mind without distraction. And your energy without being absorbed elsewhere. Into the freedom, into being free once in your life, free from all of this, to fellowship with God. And then you will have a surprise that you never expected. Because while you were chained to earth, you tried to commune with God, and it was so tiring, it was so useless, it was so futile. Because every time you rose up with wings like eagles, suddenly the chain rudely dragged you back to earth again. Bang! It shook you and you realized, I can't go any higher. Not until that chain is cut, the chain of covetousness, the chain of avarice, the greatest of all crimes that Lao Tzu said. Can you imagine? Just for a moment, imagine it. You haven't experienced it, imagine. Just to be free for once. And there, unbound, with a peace that you never knew before, because you know the desire for this and that takes away all peace, doesn't it? You want this and you want that, you can't have it, you want to struggle for it. There's no peace, no joy. For once, the peace that comes. And this exhaustion, the tiredness of struggling, of fighting against this and struggling with that, is all gone. Why are you so tired? Is it because you work so hard for the Lord? Or because you have exhausted yourself, fighting within yourself? Because you struggle for the things you cannot have. You want to have, but it's so far out of reach, it's going to take a long time, a lot of hard work, and you're exhausted. Or is it that you are fighting against the desire for these things, and you're still exhausting yourself in the process? Because you want to be free and are not yet free, and you're in the state of Romans 7. Very exhausting position. The good you want to do, you can't do. The desire to be free, but you can't be free. Have you met a man who is free? And you talk to him and you see he is free. He doesn't strive for these things. They mean nothing to him. And there is a surge of spiritual energy and power in him that hits you as something quite unusual. And when he talks about God, he knows who he's talking about. He's not talking about an idea, a theology. He's talking about somebody he knows. And you sense there is freedom, there is love, there is joy, there is peace, there is power. That is what Christianity is about. And my ministry here in Montreal would be a total failure if there is not one person at the end of these 9.5 years of ministry who has been freed from the chains of this avarice, this covetousness, this bondage to material things, and has flown away like a bird from the snare into the joy of knowing God. May God grant you ears to hear. Let us pray.